travels through a kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Travels Through a Kingdom. It's myself, Kaya Flynn, with you until 7 o'clock this evening. Missed you all last week. Thanks to Armagh and Galway. I didn't get to talk to you, but no need to worry. I am back. I didn't go anywhere, but I was in Dublin for the to watch the Kerry versus Mayo game as well. So all the show was pre-recorded, so there is no worries there. But we're back this week with you for more Travels Through a Kingdom. I met a few people on the day as well, so it was lovely to see you, and we'll be back again in Croke Park next week for Kerry versus Dublin. So if you want to have your pictures or your best wishes taken for the Kerry team onto our social media channels, Instagram and Facebook, try and find me. I'll be wearing the Radio Kerry jacket or the Radio Kerry green t-shirt. It's fairly bright, so you should see me, but don't be shy. We'd love to get to know you all and get those out there as well. So best wishes to Kerry next weekend. Hopefully it'll be a good game, and well, fingers crossed the results are what we want them to be. I can't believe it's already come around so fast as well, so mad how time flies as well. We're also hosting our Kerry Colours competition, so we're encouraging everyone across the county to show your Kerry Colours for the senior semi-final and hopefully the final on your homes, cars and businesses. So send us your pictures and your videos with your green and gold displays via email, WhatsApp and Facebook messengers to be in a chance to win a fabulous hamper courtesy of our Kerry Colours sponsor, Lee Strand, the official sponsored milk of Kerry GAA. So if you want to get in touch or try and display your colours as well, you can do it on your house, your car, your business, and you can do so by entering email your photos or videos to colour@radiokerry.ie, WhatsApp your photos or videos to 083 300 3300 or using Facebook messengers as well. So that's Radio Kerry. So send your photos or videos to the main Radio Kerry Facebook page, and we'll be announcing our winners on the afternoon show on Friday, July the 8th. So that'll be good fun to get involved with as well. But now on with tonight's programme. We will be heading out to Lyrecombe Palm, where we meet Joe Harrington, and he shares the story of the area itself. We will listen back to the archive of Sean Hurley with a fitting piece for this weekend about the 4th of July festival Sean attended a number of years ago. And your comments too. And if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting 083 300 3300 or emailing me kflynn@radiokerry.ie. But first on tonight's show, we are in Killarney, where I met some of the people registering for the Ring of Kerry charity cycle. This year, the cycle is supporting Irish Community Air Ambulance, Down Syndrome Kerry, Come On Evra, Breakthrough Cancer Research, Banna Rescue and Ard Cremon Dementia Centre. I firstly spoke to two men from Armagh about the cycle and why they do it. And in my recordings, I mentioned the cycle is 180 kilometres, but when I read people's tops, it was saying 170 kilometres. So yes, I am wrong, and I'm admitting I'm wrong. So if you're texting in when you hear me say 180k, I'm wrong. So yeah. Now, let's take you to those recordings.
We're from the Rowdy County, County Armagh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, across McLean on Silver Bridge.
Very good. So you came down today to
do... We come down today, yeah.
Okay, is this something that you would have done before?
Yes, we've done it before, yeah.
A number of times.
Okay, why do you do the Ring of Kerry cycle?
It's always a challenge, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest part. Like, it's ideal. It's a one route. Once you go down that road there, there's no coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the only thing you can go do is take a harder route back, come across the mountains if you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a great challenge always.
Yeah.
And I think they've got it well sorted out, well organised, and the charities are all very, very worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. What year did you start doing this?
2019 was my seventh, you know. And I was 76 on the 1st of June.
So this, he doesn't look a day of it.
It is going to be 78. You know, Bennett, you done 5 or 6, was it?
I went over done 5 or 6 more.
Yeah.
Over the years.
180k, is that not really tough? I did 20k one time and I couldn't walk for a few days.
Well, if you're used to cycling, I think, if you get the wee bit of extra, you know, the it's a bit like everything else. If you didn't walk for 12 months, it'd be hard to walk.
We used to do the Mara cycles, Belfast, Dublin. You know, we done 9 of those, and 9 in a skill in Sligo, you know, which was the same thing, only one was Cooperation North, the other was Cooperation Ireland. You know, so we done 9 in a skill in Sligo and 9 in Dublin Belfast. So that's 20 motorcycles all together, you know.
Yeah. The best part of them, I think.
Yeah. So that, we're
at it. Have been on a bike before. You know.
Yeah. What is the toughest part of the Ring of Kerry, do you think?
Toughest part of the Ring of Kerry is getting out in the morning and getting on your bike.
Yeah.
And the toughest part of exercise is the same. No matter what exercise you're doing or sport, is getting out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get in the front door, you get running, you get swimming, you get whatever the case.
If you get away dry, you're okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, dry start.
Yeah.
Means
I know today is very muggy at the moment,
so
okay
we have
tomorrow.
Very heavy showers coming down now, you know, the whole way.
Yeah.
You know, but hopefully it'll dry up, you know.
And what time are you hoping to head off?
As early as possible.
What's your first name?
Pauline.
And you're Molly?
Molly.
Molly, where are you from?
Dublin.
And, oh, wow. So you came down from Dublin today to do the Ring of Kerry tomorrow?
We did indeed. That's the plan.
Oh, wow. Why are you doing the Ring of Kerry?
We booked good weather, so we're just
Definitely.
You know yourself.
But why are you doing the Ring of Kerry?
Well, I did it before, and half the family are doing it, and we just think there's good cause. It's a good day out. Unfortunate about the distance, but sure, we'll
180 key, are you able for that?
Well, we'll ask us tomorrow. Come around this time tomorrow now, you see.
Molly, is this your first time doing it?
It is, yeah. First
time. How are you feeling?
Oh, look, sure, probably could have done with a bit more training, but sure.
Well, tell her exactly how you're feeling.
Oh, how am I feeling? Yeah. I don't know, how am I feeling?
Hungover.
A little bit hungover today.
Oh, no. Well, as long as you don't get hungover tomorrow, then you should be okay.
Yeah, hoping for a good night's rest tonight.
It's a great organisation to support so many charities as well, like that, so. So it probably means a lot to a lot of people doing these
absolutely.
You know, and you get great support on the way, and that's huge, and the atmosphere is good crack.
Yeah.
And people help you along.
Good crack,
you still have to do the mileage, but there's a bit of crack.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, a lot of people realise that it's not a race. You know, everyone's going at their own pace.
Oh, sure, isn't a race.
Slow and steady.
Yeah, that's it. That's
when did you start doing them?
Oh, no, I only did it once 3 years ago, and I said never again.
What brought you back?
Me,
Molly.
I guilt tripped into doing it, and God love her, she's here now.
Oh, Molly, you're a tough cookie. Very good. And what time are you hoping to set off in the morning?
Seven.
Listen, if we could do it now while the weather's dry, we'd do it. Probably around half six, seven,
yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. And so tonight then, early night.
Early
Molly
night
doesn't
into
snore,
bed.
We'll have a good night's sleep.
Oh, Molly, I see she's your biggest fan anyway.
I'm telling you.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Not at all.
Good luck, you said.
So it's Ger Healy. Yeah.
So you're doing the Ring of Kerry cycle this year. Is this your first time doing it?
No, I'd say I've done it about probably 10 times.
Okay.
I started, I think, the first year I did it was around 2001 on a mountain bike. But so it was much harder, but I'm glad to be doing it on a racer the second time I did it after that.
You learned your lesson.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow, why do you do the Ring of Kerry? What is it that
Well, look, it's a great social event in Killarney, and, you know, the scenery is amazing, but the... getting to engage with the people who are doing it there, and I suppose seeing everybody, all, you know, shapes and sizes, by doing it. I think I've seen on one year there, I saw a young fella in Beaufort shop, about he was 13 and he had the gear on after doing the Ring of Kerry. And while I was there out there during the day, there was a man in his 80s doing it as well. So it's just, you know, meeting people from all those age groups to see that, and to see them raise money as well, obviously for some very good charities in Kerry, which is great to see.
Yeah, and there's a number of charities this year, which is great that they're all, you know, being there and being supported in that way. I suppose last year and the year beforehand we didn't have it, and I know they did it the virtual way, didn't they? Did you take part in that?
I didn't bother with the virtual one, I said I'd wait. I get a kick out of doing the real thing.
Yeah.
So.
How are you feeling now? Are you all prepped for the morning?
I've done about 30 kilometres in the last month, so I've done better training before, but look, we'll be alright on the day.
Do you think your dad can do it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does he bring e-cycling?
Yes. Yeah, but I don't really like it.
Where would he bring you?
Mostly to the park and stuff like that.
So are you training him as well as he training you?
I think he's better than him.
At least you have one fan in that sense.
I know, yeah. Christian loves the Lake Cairn.
Very good. What time are you hoping to head out in the morning?
Oh, I'd say I'll go around 7 o'clock and hopefully be back in time for a couple of refreshments.
Very good. Well, best of luck with it and thanks so much for talking to me. What's your first name?
John B. Cronin from Muckross in Killarney.
Very good, John. Have you done the Ring of Kerry before?
Yeah, I have 25 times.
Oh, wow.
So tomorrow will be my 26th, hopefully.
What's bringing you back 26 times in a row?
Well, I'm into cycling a bit, like, you know, so I didn't... that's sort of a special occasion this year, because my brother died of cancer there about 2 years ago, so they're doing a special birthday run for him tomorrow, Brendan Cronin.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah, I thought it was a bit lonesome in one sense, like, but it is good to the same time to put it a good cause, like, you know. It's a good cause.
I suppose this event then would mean a lot to you and your family.
It would, but like that now that my wife does it as well, so it's out of it as a group, started out. There was only 400 done, I think, the year the first time we done it. So.
Wow, yeah. And I think it's 5,000 to 6,000 this year that are registered?
Yeah, well, yes, I think there's that at least, yeah.
Okay.
So it's always great for the people that organise it there all year after Carl Walsh and Paddy Tracy and all these. There's a lot of credit to them.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. Well organised and you've been
exactly, yeah. Exactly, and hopefully, please God, the weather will be somewhere.
Mm-hmm. What time are you hoping to head off?
We'll probably head off. Generally, the official start is about 7:30, I think. So we go there around, we start in the Gleneagle, and we pass here around house. When we're passing the cathedral there around 7:30, we're happy. So we'll head back in around 5 o'clock then for the celebrations here, which makes it all worthwhile.
Very good. How do you keep going? Like, is it not really tough to do 180 kilometres?
You can. I suppose you have a bit of work in, the more work you're in, the makes more things. There's a great caramel atmosphere along the way, so we stop in Castavine and we stop again in Waterville and down in the Blackshop, and then we go on to Sneem and on to Kinmare. It's a surprising one. So great, past Waterville is probably a great turning point. Cumacista is a tough, like, but that probably miles in the evening is probably that bit tougher because you have 100 miles under your belt at that stage, don't you? Mm-hmm. And the legs are getting a bit weary, but...
Of course. Yeah. Like, and you say you do a bit of cycling anyway, so it's probably
I try to keep fit as best I can, and this is a good goal anyway, don't you?
Yeah.
So we missed it the last couple of years, so please God, it'll be great, and hopefully we'll go on for another year or two.
Definitely. Fingers crossed. Thanks so much for coming, and I'm so sorry about the loss of your brother, but you know what? He'll be there with you in spirit tomorrow.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Perfect. All right, thank
Brilliant.
You.
Take care. Bye.
Vincent.
Vincent, where are you from?
Furries.
Oh, furries. So the Ring of Kerry must be something you do every so often?
This is my 12th, yeah.
Okay, why do you do the Ring of Kerry?
I suppose one of the reasons, I suppose, is that it's for a bit of fitness, and I suppose there's always good causes as well. This year I'm doing it for the air ambulance, which, you know, is a very important service to the county. So that
obviously,
was
in a lot of, you know, over the last couple of weeks, it's been very much used and very much shown how much it is needed around
Absolutely,
the county.
Absolutely, yeah, it is a marvellous service, and you know, we're delighted to support it.
So you've been doing this a couple of years. What is it that brings you back to going on a bike? For how many hours does it take to get to the finish line?
Yeah, 7 or 8 hours. It's I suppose a lot of it is there's a great atmosphere on the day. I've always enjoyed it, and you know, a few friends do it with me, so it is a day out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how do your friends find it? Do you have to pull them to try and do it, or is it you all go together anyway?
No, absolutely not. People that have done it, I think, come back and do it over and over again. So I don't think there's anything too daunting about it. It sounds daunting, but it's not too bad.
And would you do cycling in the meantime anyway?
Not a whole pile.
Oh, right.
No, not a whole pile. It kind of it gets me on the bike maybe around the month of April, and park it up then in the month of July, and maybe don't see it again until the following year. But this year I'm hoping to keep it going, but you never know.
Are you hoping maybe sometime all your girls will be joining with you on the...
Well, these are my nieces from Australia.
Oh,
so
very good.
They've come around for a few weeks, and these are my two daughters. So when they were younger they said they'd do it, but now they're beginning
to... You're still asking, are you?
..think twice about it. Yeah.
Very good. Will you be supporting them on the day?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. They'll be there at the finish line for you anyway.
Well, they hopefully, yeah. Hopefully I'll make it.
You will, of course. Yeah. Listen, best of luck with it.
Thanks very much.
I hope you enjoy it and the weather stands out in some sort.
Yeah, well, I say it'll be a few showers, but you will.
Yeah, they'll cool you down anyway.
It will.
Perfect.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. So, what's your first name?
Dennis.
Ted. And you're from?
I'm from Wallingford, Connecticut.
Oh, wow. You're
same here.
Wow. Yeah. So you're here in Kerry to do the Ring of Kerry Cycle, and this isn't your first time?
No.
Tell us a bit about that.
Well, the first time I did it, it was like rainy. We did it together that first time, and it was raining and horizontal rain and everything. But then it cleared up, and it was just beautiful coming in. And then the next year I did it again. I think it was 2000, 18, and the sun was out, and it was absolutely gorgeous and everything. So I told Ted about it. You got to come out on a good day, you know. Like, sure enough, we come back with a COVID kept us out for a few, you know.
As it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was business that got you here.
Yeah, yeah. I have business in town, so I go visit my customer, and it just happens to be a bike ride, so go for the bike ride.
And would you do cycling at home or anything like that?
Yes. Yeah, we cycle all the time.
Yep. We do these kind of charity cycles.
Yeah. Yeah, we do some tours, you know. We did last year, we did Croatia, and we did Death Valley, we did Portugal. So, yeah, we just like to have fun on our bicycles.
And what is it about the Ring of Kerry that keeps bringing you back?
I think they're Irish people.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a lot of fun. And not to mention the scenery. And just a lot of fun.
Is there any specific part of the cycle that you find just so tough that you actually dread coming to that section?
There are some hills that are challenging. And sometimes the sun in the States really starts beating on you. It's like kryptonite. It starts weakening you. You know, oh, I don't know if I belong here, you know. Yeah. But for the most part, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, wow, brilliant. And there's obviously, like, you're supporting a lot of charities while doing this as well. So it's a great cause to come
all the way from America to come here.
And
we didn't know which one to choose, so it's just a general fund. You know, they'll find a good home for this money.
Brilliant. So what time are you hoping to head out in the morning?
6 a.m.
Yeah, about 6.
Yeah. It takes us longer, so we...
Yeah. We want to savor every moment of it. Yeah.
How many hours should that take you then?
We should be back by 5.
No, I'd say 4. Before that, probably. Yeah. Depends how much you hang around the rest stops.
Yeah, that's
true.
You
know, so if we...
Yeah.
Hang around, eat, and then try to get back on a bike and go again.
Oh, very good. Well, best of luck with it. Okay. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Hey, Radio Kerry.
And there were some of the people taking part in this year's Ring of Kerry Cycle. There was loads of people registering on the day as well. We didn't get around to recording everyone, otherwise we'd have about 3 hours worth of a programme. But congratulations to everyone that took part. It's not an easy thing to do. As I said, I got it wrong. I thought it was 180k, but it's 170. But still, that's a long distance. I couldn't do it. And as I was saying to one of the people in my recordings, I suppose it was 2020. I cycled from Castlemaine to around Ballyfinan into Fyries. It was about a 20k loop anyway back home. And my God, I couldn't walk for a few days afterwards. So to do 170k in one day, I respect anyone that does that. And as we mentioned, Ring of Kerry Charity Cycle helps so many charities as well as that as well. So well done to everyone that took part. I was also talking to Cathal Walsh on the day as well, and he was very happy with how everything was going, and there was obviously updates on our news bulletins yesterday, and he was on with Joe on the Saturday supplement as well, so it was absolutely fantastic. And if you did the Ring of Kerry cycle, let me know how you got on, how many hours did it take you, and what were the stopping points like. I saw one of my friends on Instagram had a Magnum in the middle of one of his stop points as well, so that's always lovely to enjoy a treat like that as well. And I suppose it's a good thing to recognise as well, these things aren't races, it's achievements, and everyone gets a medal at the end of the day. So well done to everyone. But let me know how you got on. Send us in some of your pictures, or were you there? Were you supporting someone? And how they feel once they cross the finish line? Do let us know. We're going to take a quick break here on Travels Through a Kingdom, and we'll be back with more after these.
Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
And very welcome back to this week's Travels Through a Kingdom. I just got a message in there from Charles. I'm enjoying listening to you chat to some of the people who cycled the Ring of Kerry. Well done to all who did it, and missed you last week. Thank you. I also missed myself last week. lovely, obviously, getting in touch with all of you as well and connecting with you through the airwaves. So, we're back on the road, basically. But you can blame Armagh and Galway for that one. Now, next on Travels Through a Kingdom, we are heading out to Lara Campan, where I met the lovely Kay and Joe. And I was curious to learn a bit more about Lara Campan and the story behind it as well. And when I reached out to Lara Campan community, it was Joe that they suggested was the best person to speak to. We talk about many things, but first Joe tells us a little bit about himself.
My name is Joe Harrington. I'm from Lara Campan, born here, worked out at the place for a long time, down Limerick way over in Australia. And now back in Lara Campan and involved in as much things as I can in the area on a voluntary community basis.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you do here in Lara Campan.
Well, coming up next, I suppose, the most immediate thing is the Dan Paddy Andy Festival that's going over 22, 23 years now. We missed the last couple of years because of COVID, but we will have it this year for sure. We have all the bands lined up and we're set and ready to go. So looking forward to that. the festival that's the furthest away from a town, and that you can still be on dry land. Mm-hmm. So we're like the idea that we have a festival in such an isolated spot as Laoghaire Campine.
That's a matchmaking festival, isn't it?
Well, it's called after a matchmaker, okay. Dan Paddy Andy O'Sullivan, and he was referred to as the last of the great Irish matchmakers. A lot of stuff was written by John B. Keane about him that probably made him a bit more famous than maybe he would otherwise be, and a lot of humorous stories told about him, and Kay there has written the story of Dan Paddy Andy O'Sullivan, the real story, and that's interesting to see as well. But in relation to matches at the festival, we do know a couple of matches were made, but we don't make it a deliberate effort to get people together. People can find their partners there. We give them the opportunity in terms of dancing and everything else, the bog walk that we do and things like that. So we do know that on a couple of occasions we've seen people around the back of the marquee, and you can imagine.
I let the listeners get their imagination for that one.
Exactly.
Brilliant. So you've grown up in Laoghaire Campine over the last couple of years. Tell us a bit about what this area has to offer.
Well, I suppose the thing about the area is the heritage part of it that we have the most interest in at the moment. Now, we are working on a lime kiln down below there, and we've put up a picnic table, and it's become a bit of a feature now in the area. It's a bit of a landmark, and it's still not finished. It's about 95% finished. Further down, we're putting up a sign where there was a barracks and a historical farm, which goes back to the Earl of Kerry, back to the Fitzmaurices in Lixna, back to 1743. We have papers going back that far. And then further on up the road, we have a forge that we're going to have a mural of horseshoeing, we'll say, for instance, activity on the gable of it. And that'll be ready by July. So those are the sort of things that that were around in my time, but is now they're beginning to be picked out and highlighted. You know, but when I was growing up around here, it would surprise people to know that there wasn't a tree to be seen apart from a few trees around farmers' houses to break the wind. If a tree was seen somewhere, it would be the talk of the place. How did that grow there? And now you can't see the wood from the trees, so to speak, mm-hmm. because the forestry has taken over, and it's even difficult to get a place to build a house because of so much of the land has been taken over by forestry. It's a pity the way it has gone, I think myself. If it hadn't gone that way, I think this place would be a tourist attraction now, like the west of Yorkshire and the moors and places like that, because to be so unique bogland, upland bogland, it was nice in its own way. Mm-hmm. But so that was the way it was that time. That was the scenery, that was the way it looked, and that has changed.
Yeah, tell us the story of Bordnamona, because you were saying to me when I came here that I said that you have a beautiful view outside your house, but as you were saying about the trees, that they weren't there many years ago.
The Bordnamona was the Turf Development Board, I think they were called before that, back in the 30s. De Valera and company, they came up with this idea that Irish bogs had to be developed. So the old way of cutting was using the slan and the pike and all that, and fairly backbreaking work and pretty slow. So idea came up, they went around to Russia and to Germany and places looking at how things were done there, and they discovered that the machine was the job. Mm-hmm. So they decided to open Laoghaire Campine Bog. They bought 500 acres of that mountainside out the window there that I was showing you from the door, and they bought it off the Quills, the family of the Quills, and it was a place that used to be known as Bogachna Mála Bhog, and it no longer is. It's a townland. It's one of those townlands that sort of has disappeared. It now goes under other names, but Bordnamona decided to start their operation there. The first time that in Ireland that they used a machine to mechanically cut turf. And they, 1937, they brought in a good few men and they drained the bogs, the bog up there, and then they brought in the machine the following year, 38, and they brought in three Germans. They were called German engineers. I said they were sort of handymen more than anything else. And to still remember the names of them, right? One of them was Herr Karl, and his name, we didn't know what his first name was, but he went back early because we were heading into the Second World War. And there was another fellow called Karl Gottheim, and the local sage here, a local guy that used to write verses, wrote this about him, included in a song that he wrote about Bournemouth and the turf cutting operation. And he wrote, "Crazy Karl Gottheim, sure you never saw the like of the loony things he does on the saddle of a bike." So he was a bit of a character. But he too, unfortunately, went back to fight for the fatherland, and the two of them were never heard of again. But the third guy stayed. He was Harry Starkin, and he lived here. Bournemouth had built three houses for the engineers, and two of those still exist here and are used in Leather Compound after all those years. But the Starkin stayed in one, and Harry was very popular because he could weld. And that was a big thing for farmers, welding bits of gates and welding bits of ploughs and anything like that. Mm-hmm. He also probably had the first car that was around here, so he was always going for the doctor for somebody or whatever. And he raised a family. I went to school with one of them.
Wow.
Father Brian Starkin, he spent most of his time in Africa. He's now in Dublin. The other members of the family, that time there were four football teams in Leather Compound. That you wouldn't get two people now from Lyra on the Dua team, yeah, because of the population fall and the age profile. Two of his sons played for Lyra Compagne, and in 1960, when Bournemouth finished on that hillside, the bog was cut out, that family went back up to Offaly, to another Bournemouth place, and the two of the boys got on the Offaly team. They played for County Offaly, they were that good. So that was the Starkins, one of them, Gay Starkin, he passed away last year, but he visited us here twice a year for a good number of years for the chat. Mm-hmm. He was living up in Westmeath, and they came down to Listowel and their breaks and hopped out here for the chat because he liked talking about old times, and there aren't that many people around now that can remember about Bournemouth.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So that was the crew that came from Germany, the machine then, of course, was a big thing in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. The machine would start, I'm not sure of the month now, but we'll say probably in April, and it would start at one side of the mountain and it would start cutting the turf. Mm-hmm. Right, and the mountainside would change from brown to black as the machine spread along, and us as young people, we'd be taking bets with each other as to how far they go the next morning, and literally the next morning, because it was the first time we ever heard of a night shift, that machine was going night and day.
Oh, wow.
And there was a drone from it, and I always remember that when you didn't hear that sound, there was a bit of worry in the place, because it meant that the heartbeat really of Leather Compagne had stopped, and what was the reason, and would it get going again, because it was what gave employment and gave an income to families.
Mm-hmm. But
it used to break down at times.
Yeah, no, my question was, how many people would you say got employed from that?
Yeah, the roughly about 50 people were employed full time all the year round.
Wow.
But in the summertime, when the turf had to be harvested, when it had to be footed, mm-hmm, stood up, are collected in the collector, then you'd have hundreds. They came from all over. They were transported from, from Castlemaine, from Tralee, from Tarbert, from West Limerick, from Scatdedlin, on the backs of trucks. There was no health and safety those days.
Wow.
And they'd come in and they'd take, what they'd do is they'd take a floor of turf. A floor of turf was a certain layout of the turf that was cut. Mm. There was 32,000 sods of turf in a floor of turf.
Oh my gosh.
And what they, and it was piecework. You took on a floor of turf, and it didn't matter if you took a week to do it or a day to do it, you got the same money. So what people used to do is they'd bring in the whole family, and when the kids come from school, the kids would go in as well, and they'd try to get as many floors of turf done as they could, because they get paid by the floor. So there was a bit of money made, all right, because it depended, it was up to yourself.
Were they able to bring it home as well?
No. This turf was for that time, the hospitals and all those sort of institutions, they were heated with big boilers, right? And it was turf was the fuel. So a lot of the turf now that was saved and harvested on that hillside wound up in hospitals in Tralee and in Cork and places like that. Mm. They also sold it to private couriers, we call them, and people that had trucks who would buy it, and then they would resell it again. Okay. Someplace else, they'd have markets for it in different places. Mm-hmm. And we have advertisements in the papers from those times, and they vied with each other to get the best of the turf.
And how many years did that go on for?
It went on from 37 to 60. I won't go into it now, but when they finished there, then they moved everything across to about 2 miles across the Smeerla to Corrycannon, just beyond the pub up mm-hmm. there, which is the Four Islands Bar. They moved it on up to there, and they set up their turf cutting operation there for a few years, but that was a smaller bog and they cut it out fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And then that was the end of that. They withdrew from it and went up the Midlands again, like, you know. Mm-hmm. The Starkins left when they won over, when the Lair Compound bog was cut out. They didn't stay on for the Bournemouth one, for the Corrycannon one. Mm-hmm. So there was a locomotive up on that bog as well for to bring the turf down. There was, some people say 10 miles of track, but I don't think there was 10 miles of track. I don't think you could fit 10 miles up there, but there was a few miles of track up on that mountainside, and a locomotive which was brought in from Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah, there was one of those, it was an engine, and the funny thing about it was that you started it with petrol, and then you had to change over to diesel.
Oh,
it was strange. I knew the guy that used to drive it, and he was explaining to me how it works. That was unusual. When they finished in Lair Bog, that locomotive was taken over to Barnabog, which is in East Kerry, and it was used over there for a while. They opened up Barnabog a good bit later than Lair, so that was still going, and they used the locomotive.
And when it all stopped, did you find a lot of people left Lair Compound after that?
Oh, there was, sure. When I was going to school, there was 108, I remember, was the highest number at school, 108. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing at all like that there now. It's a very small school now. And so the numbers have fallen. People had to immigrate. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it went. But at one time, Lair Compound was probably the biggest employer in Kerry. If you think about it, mm-hmm. where else was there a place that gave permanent work to 50 people? If you think about it, there was no Kerry Co-op, there was nothing like that. So it was the biggest employer. And for seasonal work then, it was by massively the biggest employer, because there was a few hundred people would be over there in that bog at that time. Mm-hmm. The travellers would come as well. Mm-hmm. Right, there was one guy, he was called Charlie O'Brien, and actually a descendant of his turned up here looking for the story about him a few years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, he was from England, and he traced his relatives back this way, and Charlie the O'Briens, they were in, he had a lame step, he had a bit of a limp, and another poet from Lair Compound wrote about him.
Oh yeah, go on.
Yeah, it says, the travellers are footing, that's footing the turf, the travellers are footing, the times they are great, they are parked on the river and Paddy's estate and our father down the road. And the old Charlie remarked, as he pawed at the ground, the bait of the Lair people cannot be found.
Oh.
So he got on well, the travellers got on well when they were here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. There was 250,000 tons of turf taken off that mountainside over there in that time.
That's amazing.
That's a lot of turf. And all that had to be handled. Every single side of that had to be handled, not just once, but several times. They had a collector over there, which was basically a conveyor belt that was stretched across maybe, I don't know how long, I suppose, maybe 50 yards. And that would move forward and you'd be throwing the turf into it and it would be taking it out to the side, and then that would fall into the wagons and at the and the locomotives, and that brought down to the
tip. There must have been some bedbacks back then. People must have had bedbacks back then.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. And women worked up there too. And it was tough going. There's no doubt about it. Now, I'd say probably what kept people going was the camaraderie. There was, when you get a crowd together, like, and they all... They
bounce
said
that
the chat and everything else could be pretty good, mm-hmm. I'd imagine. The there's a long that sorry, Bordnamona has made a big impression, obviously, mm-hmm. in Leather Compound. People outside of Leather Compound think Bordnamona when they hear it. Mm-hmm. Well, my generation probably dying a bit now, but everybody. That's what I thought, because somebody belonging to him at some stage would have jumped on the back of a truck to get a bit of work in Lyot. It was a big employer.
And was it a lot of money that people were getting?
The money, they say that it was 5 shillings back in the 40s for a floor of turf, but it's very hard to sort of figure out about that. I do know that the when the workers first started in Bordnamona, the wages were pretty bad. Mm. But they joined the union, and a lot of them joined the Labour Party, of all things, out here in the middle of nowhere. You would never associate. The Labour Party always had a big vote out here as a result of that, because the Labour Party were very connected with the unions. Mm-hmm. And I remember my father was treasurer of the union, the local branch here, and he'd be counting the trippenny bits, just 3 pence a week that people paid. Three pence, and it was a trippenny bit, like, you know. Yeah. So that was the thing. And as a result of the union, to be fair now, and I've researched it, the wages did increase, and they were on reasonably good money eventually.
Livable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was good money eventually, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was Joe Harrington speaking to me about Lara Campan and the days of Bordnamona and the turf there as well. I wonder, is anyone here listening associated with any of that, or if that was anything to do with your family as an employer at the very beginning? Do let us know. It's a fascinating story to listen to, and Joe obviously spoke very well about it. And where he was situated in Lara Campan, he showed me just outside, if you look outside his front door, where all the trees are now, that we were talking about the trees at the beginning, was all where they used to cut the turf as well. So it was absolutely amazing to imagine that there was no trees there to begin with. And if you check out our Radio Kerry Facebook page on our Facebook, you'll see a picture of Joe, and that's the background there as well. So I thought it was fascinating to see. A beautiful community, a nice small little community, but it's absolutely beautiful. And as you can see as well, they all come together. And he was saying as well in the recording, Joe, that I suppose it was a hard day's work, but it all depends on the company that you have. And I find that always helps. If you work with people that you absolutely get on with and the crack, you'll never feel a day's work. You'll never feel like you worked a day in that sense, and, you know, making the memories together and like that. But you need a good worker for that, you know. But we all are at the end of the day. So tell me your memories of you picking turf back in the days as well. I only did it once, and once was enough. I remember I was scrubbing the dirt out under my nails for days. I'll never do it again. Don't think you can do it anymore, but I'll never do it again. It was so hard. But there's people like my grandparents now, they always say to me, oh, we used to go back and the donkey was there, and, you know, we'd go up the mountains and all this. I was like, I don't know what era they were living in, but I suppose we don't realise how lucky we are now, and how, you know, we get central heating with the click of a finger, and you know, your house can be heated, you can put on a quick fire or something like that, get the water heated up quickly. It wasn't as easy like that back then, so we are very grateful for what we have, and we should be, I suppose, when you look at it in that sense as well. So a big thank you to Joe and Kay for taking the time to speak to me, and this interview as well will be podcasted in the coming days for you to listen back to, and I'll upload it on our social media channels as well. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here on Travels Through a Kingdom, and we'll be back with our final piece after these.
Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
And And we're nearly at 7 o'clock, so we're at the final piece of our show. But just before we go to our final piece, it's been announced that Puck Fair is back. So that's great. Hopefully, Travis True Kingdom will be going out to Puck Fair as well and getting all the atmosphere of that. 3 years, 2019, I went on the last day for Puck. Do I remember it? No, I don't. But that is the sign of a good night. But no, it's a fantastic kind of a festival and I suppose a great tradition to have as well. And I was reading to you 2 weeks ago about fun facts around Kerry, and Puck Fair is one of them. So Ireland's oldest traditional fair is held in Kerry. The Puck Fair, which is Ireland's oldest traditional festival, is over 400 years old and is held every year in the Kerry town of Killorgan. The Puck Fair is famous for being the only festival in the world where a wild mountain goat is crowned the king. So where would you get that? Only in Kerry. But no, it's a fantastic festival to have back anyway, and we're delighted to see it back, and many more to come with as well. I actually remember when it went for 5 days. What year was that? I'll look that up now during our next piece, but I remember the 5 days, but I don't know how we kept going, but apparently we did anyway. Now, today is the 3rd of July, and while looking back through the archives of Sean Hurley, I said I'd try and find a piece Sean did about the 4th of July, and behold, I found it. The piece is where Sean attended the parade and speaks to some of the people involved in preparing the 4th of July Festival in Killarney.
Brad McDavid, it's very nice to have you in Killarney, and you're a member of this 100-piece band, I believe.
I am. I'm the director.
The director of it. We couldn't get better than that on this beautiful fine day.
It's beautiful, and we're so honoured to be here to perform for a 4th of July parade in Killarney, Ireland. That's awesome.
Yes. What was it like trying to get the 100 to come over here, or do you have to choose them especially from other musicians?
We travel internationally every 3 years, and when we found out that you folks have a July 4th celebration, it just seemed natural that this would be our next place to come to.
And we're here when we don't have tanks in our street either.
That's right.
You heard about that.
We're good. Yeah, we're fine with that.
All good humor people.
We've already seen cowboys and Indians and Uncle Sam's, and it's a lot of fun.
You feel at home then?
We do. We absolutely do. We've already had some apple pie, so we feel good.
All right. Thank you very much. Enjoy the parade tonight.
Thank you, Sean. Okay, thank you.
And that was Brad McDavid, director of the University of Washington Marching Band from Seattle. Mayor Michael Gleeson, another wonderful day.
Wonderful day, and the crowds have gathered, so it's marvellous that this is being celebrated, and that let's hope everybody has a wonderfully enjoyable Independence Day, and that both countries, people from both countries, will celebrate in style.
Got a minute, Margaret.
Got a minute, Margaret.
Paul Sherry, how are you today?
Sean, great, how are you?
All going according to plan.
So far, so good, anyway. Beautiful day.
You've changed it from 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning to the afternoon now.
Yeah, just in the last 2 years, Sean, it seems. I think we were getting a bit fed up getting up so early in the morning and dragging everybody out of bed, but it seems to work just as well, to be honest, in the afternoon. So, you know, you can see from the crowd that's gathered here, there's a lot of the Americans, visitors are still around, you know, so it seems to work well at 3 o'clock as well.
And, of course, the big parade tonight.
Absolutely, from the outlet centre. So we're hoping everybody comes out in force tonight to see we have some new floats and some new activities going on, so it should be really good.
Paul, thank you very much.
No problem, Sean.
That was President of Killarney Chamber of Tourism and Commerce, Mr. Paul Sherry, and we heard also from Mayor of Killarney, Mr. Michael Gleeson, both men who had raised both the American and Irish flags minutes earlier. For those who are not familiar with Independence Day, it was back in 1776 that 13 colonies of America declared themselves to be states, which up to then was under British rule. In fact, the vote was taken on July the 2nd and adopted on July the 4th.
And that was the archive of Sean Hurley, and bring you back to the 4th of July festival he attended a number of years ago, and that is back on again tomorrow. So best of luck. Was it on last year? I can't remember. I assume maybe not. But it's brilliant that it's going back. Obviously, I see a lot of promotion about it at the moment. So hopefully that goes well and the weather stands out for that as well. And that was obviously the archive of Sean Hurley, which we will play to you around the same time every week as well. And that's almost bringing us to the end of Travels Through a Kingdom. Before we end, I did look up the year. It was 2013. We had 5 days of Puck. So can you imagine the heads on people after the fifth day, trying to get Puck off work and stuff for that. But do you know what? Great to do these things as well. 2013? Oh my God, that was 9 years ago. Madness altogether. So as I was saying, a big thank you and well done to everyone that took part in the Ring of Kerry charity cycle. I don't know how you do it, but you're tough cookies anyway. To Joe Harrington and Kay O'Leary, who invited me over to Laura Compone and had me and spoke to me on tonight's programme as well. And to all that got in touch here and tuned in. I see a couple of messages there as well. Thank you, Patrick, for tuning in the stall as always. If you want to get in touch with Travis Tudor Kingdom, you can do so by emailing me, kflynn@radiokerry.ie. Whether that's an event you'd like me to attend, a story you want to tell, or anything that you think is for here, don't be afraid to say hello. And make sure you do stay tuned here on Radio Kerry as Elaine Kinsella is on the way with 7 days after the news. And then Sean Riley is on from 8 with his Irish favourites. So if you see me next weekend outside Croke Park, please make sure you say hello and we'll take your few pictures. But until then, we'll tune into next week's show and do take care of yourself. So up Kerry,